The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Lemonada.
Yeah, Abby. Abby could be playing pro one day. You might see her on CBC Canada. Look at that beacon. Look at that stick handle.
Abby Rock's hockey dream started in her backyard in Michigan's frosty Upper Peninsula, the UP.
In a grainy home video, you can hear her dad behind the camera praising her shooting skills.
Look at that shot. Look at that shot. He scored again. He scored. Nice to score, isn't it?
I think from that time, there's videos of me skating around. I wasn't very good.
And she dropped the stick and she fell down.
Just like four or five, and you're just flying around. And I think for a 5 and 6 year old kid, like being able to go that fast on these skates, and it's just like a new experience for me. It was so fun.
In a home video, you can see a young Abby zooming past her competitor on the rink her father built in their backyard. That's where you could find Abby most days.
We bought a place and we kind of cleared the whole back and with trees and opened it up because we wanted to build an ice rink.
I think a lot of my memories from my early childhood aren't necessarily in organized hockey as much as my backyard when I would invite my friends over and we would just play shinny.
Shinny is a Native American sport with curved stick and a ball that's somewhere between hockey and lacrosse. Abby played it growing up because, like a lot of kids in her hometown, she's Indigenous.
But when she got to college, things changed.
When my teammates, some of them found out I was Indigenous, they were like, you're Indigenous? And some of them were like, I think you're the first like Native person I know. And I was like, what? What do you mean? I'm like, that is so crazy to me that no, you guys don't have this representation or even see this representation at all.
Today, Abby is one of a handful of Indigenous athletes in professional hockey, not just in the United States, but in all of the Americas. An honor for her, but also a sign of a big problem.
I started to realize how rare it is to get people of color in the sport. And I think at that point was when my identity became, I wouldn't say more important, but more apparent that I think anybody can play hockey and anybody can excel at it. And it should be for everybody because it's such a great sport that has brought me so much good in my life. For me, it was just realizing how disappointing it was that there wasn't a lot of BIPOC people playing hockey because it can be such a light for so many people.
Hi, I'm NBCLX storyteller Ngozi Okelodo, and I'm joined by my co-host Apollo Ono. He's Team USA's most decorated Winter Olympian, a best-selling author, and even a Dancing with the Stars champion.
Thank you, Ngozi. This is my new favorite Olympian, where we introduce you to some of the most inspiring members of Team USA, not just because of how they're dominating the competition, but because of what they're doing when the cameras are off.
Apollo, when you think of ice hockey, who are the first athletes that come to mind?
Obviously, Wayne Gretzky. I love watching Alexander Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby. And Hillary Knight and Kendall Coyne Schofield always dominate for Team USA.
all amazing athletes, but also all of them are white. That's not too surprising since in 2020, out of the 700 players in the NHL, there were only 43 players of color.
Wow, only 43.
Yeah.
But don't mistake the lack of diversity at the pro levels as a lack of interest from Black, Indigenous, and people of color. For Team USA's Abby Rock, ice hockey was in her blood.
I grew up Upper Peninsula, Michigan. It's cold 9 months out of the year, probably. It can snow in May for all you know. So growing up there, it's just, it's a hockey place. It's a hockey town. And I grew up in a very small town. I think about 12,000 people in it. It's hockey was just the sport. We play a bunch of other sports, but hockey, you're just kind of a hockey town and a hockey community.
It really seems like Abby was born to play hockey.
Funny enough, Abby could have had a very different career on the ice. Here's Abby's dad, Jim Rock.
We used to take the girls to the rink. Her older sister, Emma, I took them out. That was her first time skating. I think she was like 2 years old and Emma was four. So they were. She was young when she started skating. She started in figure skates. Her mother tried to get her in figure skating. And then she just kind of wanted to go the hockey way. And my other daughter wanted to figure skate.
I can't picture Abby as a figure skater.
That's Abby's uncle, Chief Larry Rock of the Wanapite First Nation. Here's what he remembers about young Abby.
Just when she was younger, growing up and how tough she was and how she just fit in with the boys like it was natural. Like she was a very strong, strong girl.
I've been called a rink rat by so many coaches before because they're like, she never leaves the rink. If she leaves this rink, she would go to her dad's rink and maybe jump on and push pucks at practice.
Apollo, were you ever called a rink rat?
Not like to my face, but I'm pretty sure that people would refer to us as just like the kids who were rink rats.
It's clear Abby loved the sport from a young age, and even when there wasn't a girls' team, she wasn't about to let that get in her way.
I played boys hockey all the way up, basically. We only had boys hockey teams where I'm from, so if I wanted to play girls hockey, I would have had to move away, or I could have played across the river in Canada. And I think for me, it was deciding... I always wanted to play with the boys. Like growing up, those were all my friends, the guys on the team.
She decided to stay home in Michigan.
I tried out and I was the only freshman, yeah, who made it. So it was a very, I'd say, intimidating experience at first. And then I just came to realize how great the group I got to play with was, because when I made it, it wasn't like there's a girl on the team. It was like, this is so cool. Like you're a girl on the varsity team as a freshman. Like this is like so awesome.
Being the only girl on an all-boys team could have been a deal-breaker, but Abby thrived in that environment, and she gives a lot of credit to her coach.
My high school coach, Coach Ferroni, was truly instrumental in my hockey career, just even taking me on that team to start and then developing me, and he made sure I had everything. He basically got a locker room built for me that was like right next to the guys, and he was like, and I don't want you to feel excluded.
John Ferroni built that locker room right next door so Abby could miss as little of the team experience as possible. Here's Coach Ferroni.
The only thing we had to do was make sure that she had a locker room to dress in before practice and, you know, before the games. But she had a stall in our locker room, so she would just come up into our locker room at a certain time every day, you know, for practice and games and to hang out. I didn't have to do too much other than just, you know, keep it simple as far as, hey, you're coaching another hockey player. And, you know, and Abby took it from there.
Coach Ferroni wanted to create an environment where Abby's gender was a non-factor.
I basically thought, you know, wanted just to treat her just like a boy, you know, not have to do anything special for her one way or the other, you know, to show her that, you know, you belong here as a hockey player. You know, whether you're male or female, you belong here as a player, because if you didn't, you would not be here. And that job was a little more easier than you think, because Abby was connected to the boys that she played with. They all seen the ability and hard work and determination in Abby, and they accepted her like right off the bat.
I think that was kind of just how I developed now too, was he took me in and decided like, yeah, I think she's going to be good enough. And I had a lot of coaches before that who would cut me and said, I'm not going to be physical enough or I can't keep up. And he was one of the first ones who like didn't doubt me at first. He was just like, no, she's got it.
That's the sort of thing you hear over and over with Olympians. And that was my own experience with speed skating, which that it's never easy. There's always a million reasons why you could call it quits or say, well, it's just not meant to be. And it really takes that drive to compete no matter what to get you to that caliber of competition.
Well, I think it's safe to say that Abby knew what she wanted and she was going to do whatever she could to make that happen. Here's her dad, Jim.
I carry a letter in my bag that she wrote in the seventh grade that she was going to drive a Mustang, play, go to Wisconsin, which she did, and play in the Olympics. I mean, she kind of had it all mapped out, and she hasn't got the Mustang or been to the Olympics yet, but she's on her way. And so she's been fortunate. She's been on a lot of really good people that have helped her get her to this point.
A lot of kids dream of becoming a professional athlete or playing in the Olympics, but Abby could see all of those goals she set for herself actually happening, including driving a Mustang.
Yeah, even at seven, she had this vision of what she was going to accomplish. And just like she was the only girl on her team in high school, she's now one of the few Indigenous players to make it to the top of her sport.
So I am First Nation, yeah. So I am Ojibwe from the Wanapate First Nation. That's like our band.
The Ojibwe First Nation has lived in the Great Lakes region of the U.S. and Canada for generations. But ever since European settlers arrived in the region, Indigenous Americans have faced oppression, displacement, genocide, and cultural erasure.
We're not just talking about the atrocities committed by those first Europeans in the 1600s. First Nations communities continue to fight for their sovereignty, safety, recognition, and equality today.
Especially for me, I think how well and how proud we are as people. And for a while, it was hard the last, I don't even want to know, 400 years since, obviously, colonization, all of that stuff. So for a while, it was hard to be openly proud of our culture and of our roots because of what was happening to Indigenous people in the U.S. and Canada. And I think that is what makes so many Native people so proud now and so resilient. And I think that's just a huge part of the culture.
Well, I still remember my mother warning me when I was in school not to tell people that I was Native. You know, she was nervous about it. She didn't want me to get picked on, or I didn't really understand it. I was oblivious to it. So, but she was adamant not to say nothing about it, just, you know, fit in kind of thing.
Like a lot of Indigenous youth who try to assimilate outside of their Native communities, Abby's dad lost touch with that part of his identity.
I kind of got away from my Native heritage because I didn't know a lot of many Native kids. But again, no one really knew I was one. I just kind of never came up, and I was told not to say nothing about it, so I never did. Whereas Abby, living in the Sioux, Sioux, Michigan, is there's a lot of Native people. So she really didn't even know the difference. Most of her, like 40% of this town's probably Native. So to her, it's just natural to be around Native Americans.
I would probably say 1 in 4, 1 in 5 people on my team were Indigenous growing up through high school. So when you look at the grand scheme of things, Indigenous people playing hockey, say in the U.S., the numbers are obviously a lot less than that. So growing up in Michigan and growing up playing hockey in that environment was obviously, it was a really special thing, and it was super fun and so great to see, especially looking back now and realizing how special that was.
Abby says she had a deep sense of community growing up, both from her Native and hockey communities. But she'll be the first to tell you that her experience is more the exception than the norm.
It was never that inviting of a sport, I think, unless you felt like you were an insider. And I think that's a big piece of what a lot of programs and a lot of people in hockey are realizing is the issue with it, is that it was never that welcoming to people who aren't white, and even girls for a long time. It wasn't a welcoming community. It was more of a white boys club kind of sport, where if you could afford it, you could play, and it was more of a boys thing.
But here's the thing. Hockey isn't actually a white sport. While the exact origin of hockey is still hotly debated, some scholars believe it to be traced back to Canadian First Nations history, which is woven right into Indigenous folklore.
Here's Patrick Wadase Madabi, the former Grand Council Chief of the Anishinaabeg Nation, who is a figurehead in the Indigenous hockey community.
Well, one story I've heard is that they were playing on an ice surface. The First Nations people were playing on an ice surface, and they were using a frozen horse turd as a puck. And you know, and homemade sticks. In the Haudenosaunee community, as my understanding, the word ouch is oggie. You know, instead of saying ouch, you say oggie. And when the non-natives heard this oggie, they thought they were saying hockey. When their kid was actually saying ouch.
I heard a similar story. So like I said, hockey originally in our community, it's a big thing. Everybody played hockey.
That's former NHL player and coach Ted Nolan.
He's a close friend of Chief Madabi's, who grew up right across the river from Abbey.
And it just didn't start because we started watching NHL. Hockey has been a very, very instrumental part in our communities for a long time, and it continues to be, except we just want hockey to be a little bit more accepting to us.
You know, historically, in not too far from here, there were wars at one time between the Anishinaabe, like the Ojibwe people, and the Haudenosaunee, like the Mohawks, Iroquois, and everything. But a lot of times, there was also historic ways of airing grievances, and they would play sports. You know, they'd have big lacrosse games or big games, and whoever was the winner of that game would be, in order to prevent bloodshed, that would be the way to settle a grievance.
But despite the sport's deep roots in Indigenous history, more than 95% of players in the National Hockey League today are white, and Indigenous players of all ages still face harmful stereotypes and racism.
Here's Washington Capitals right winger TJ Oshie, who has seen firsthand how racism affects the few BIPOC players in the NHL. He's also one of a handful of Indigenous athletes to represent the United States at the Olympics.
When you're there, you're not really thinking too much about anything besides trying to get your job done on the ice. I didn't take too many moments to really take it all in. I was super focused on trying to get a medal. But you hear stories after and, you know, see clips on social media or YouTube, and it really, really makes you appreciate what the support that you have and the people that are watching.
And while Abby has had a lot of support from her community, she's also had her own run-ins with bigotry.
I mean, I've heard somebody on the ice, not to me, to somebody I was playing with, say, like, throw your tomahawk or something. I was like, what? I was like, get out of here with that. It's definitely hurtful and hard to see just because so many people are so misinformed about the facts.
There are a lot of cultural barriers to getting Indigenous youth into hockey. But there are some practical obstacles, too. Namely, it's really expensive.
It is a very exclusive sport, and it always has been. The fact that it is an expensive sport, it is hard to get into if you don't already know the rules. It's not an easy thing to be like, I want to put my kid in hockey. Like any other sports, like basketball, you get a basketball, you get a pair of shoes. Hockey, you probably have 11 different things of equipment. The game is just, it is complicated, and it was never that inviting of a sport, I think, unless you felt like you were an insider.
According to an American Community Survey, 1 in 3 Native American families lives in poverty today. So when the average Indigenous family is making less than $23,000 a year, under the federal poverty level, it's not a tough choice between buying hockey gear or putting food on the table.
But it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, because as expensive as it is to play hockey competitively, that naturally means there are fewer Indigenous kids in the sport, which means there are fewer kids growing up to play hockey at a collegiate or professional level, which means there's less Indigenous representation at those higher levels. And the reality is, like, if you don't see someone that looks like you, represents you, you have some sense of familiarity with, you're not interested in that sport anymore, and you just move on to the next thing.
And even when Indigenous kids do get into organized hockey, they might still face misunderstanding and prejudice, which is why representation is so important. Ted Nolan says his time playing hockey was even harder because non-Native people simply didn't understand him.
We need someone who knows who we are. A lot of our kids are, and I was one of them. I wouldn't say two words if I was so shy. And we're taught to respect our elders so much and speak when we're spoken to and not to interrupt them. So we go to camps and we're a little bit quiet. They think we don't care. It has nothing to do with caring. It has something to do with respect.
For Ted, watching Indigenous athletes like Olympic runner Billy Mills and football player Tom Longo made him believe he could do it too.
It might be Bill Mills. What a tremendous surprise here. Bill Mills of the United States wins the 10,000 meters. Bill Mills of the United States, a tremendous upset, wins the 10,000 meter here.
We all those guys were such big role models for us to inspire to be. And then all of a sudden you see other people that went into other walks of life, whether it's being a doctor or a lawyer, then all of a sudden, oh, I could be that too. So that's where we get back to being role models and having someone on TV that looks like you and say, man, I could do that too.
Abby's high school coach, John Veroni, says she's already that person for young girls in her hometown.
I'm hoping that more and more and more girls keep playing. When Abby did play for me, I had a group into my locker room of young people, and there was two girls on that team. And they both wanted to sit where Abby Rock was sitting in her locker room. So I kind of had to squeeze them into the stall together. But, you know, there's an influence right there, you know, on young girls and, you know, wanting to strive to play where they want to play.
And who inspired Abby?
I don't know if you know who Ted Nolan is. He was a coach right across the river for a long time, and his kids ended up playing hockey too, and they made it to a really high level. And I think those were the most visible faces, I think, for me growing up. And now you see Ethan Bear doing great things in the NHL. And I don't think I really watched TJ Oshie until I was probably a little older. I think high school was really when he came into my view. I think it was in high school when he was at the Olympics and he scored like 3 or 4 goals in the shootout in a row or something crazy, I remember. And we were all watching. And he was actually somebody at that point who was visibly Indigenous.
Oshie and Bobrovsky duel again. Score! Team USA wins!
Here's TJ Oshie.
I feel a lot of pride that she was able to see that, and that in one way or another motivated her to make that her goal. It means a lot to me that, you know, what I love to do and what I do for fun and what I've chosen to make, my dream and my career can make a positive impact on young Indigenous kids around the U.S.
Indigenous cultures are truly just so tight-knit. And I think that is the best thing about it, is it just is usually such a tight-knit community where people want to help each other. People want to be there for each other. And I think that's truly special.
One of the ways they're showing up is by addressing the inequality in hockey.
Chief Patrick Modaby has worked for over 50 years with a hockey league known as the Little NHL, the Little Native Hockey League.
In 1971, there was lots of discrimination, and a lot of our kids weren't even being allowed to play in the local leagues. So they introduced this little NHL we call the Little Native Hockey League, and it gave kids a chance to play.
They started with just 17 teams, but the number of kids who want to play continues to grow. Today, there are about 239 teams.
We've had a number of players that have gone on, both male and female, have gone on to play in the, nationally, internationally. It's been a big thing for our kids every year. It's the biggest event of the year in First Nations country. They use it as a holiday.
The Little NHL has made an enormous impact on minimizing some of the issues Indigenous families face, including inclusivity.
But they're not alone in trying to tackle some of the obstacles preventing Indigenous kids from playing hockey.
That's right. Local leaders like Abby's uncle, Chief Larry Rock, are working to remove some of the physical barriers to the sport by literally bringing the ice to them.
And that's one of my dreams, is to put a rink here, at least for the kids to get out there and skate. And it's like that old movie there, build it and they will come. So I'm sure if we build a rink and even update our ball field, they'll come and play and get the kids into hockey and sports.
That impact also goes beyond getting kids into sports. Representation also helps shine a light on some of the issues that many Indigenous communities still face, like racism and violence and economic abuse, sovereignty, rights to their own land, access issues to food, clean water, and medical care, political representation, and the list goes on and on.
Which is why having Indigenous athletes compete at the Olympics is such a big deal. Their voices and their stories deserve to be amplified on an international platform.
But while representing Team USA has always been Abby's dream, some athletes wish they were able to represent what they see as their primary nation, their first nation.
I watched the Olympic Games this summer, and I watched Team Refugee come in, and they didn't have a country to represent it, but they just represented themselves. And I'm going, we have a nation. So instead Not having won Abby at the Olympic Games, or having won one of our athletes in one of the chosen sports, why not have Team Indigenous representing ourselves at the Olympic Games? That would be the coolest thing ever.
I agree. And it would be cool. I think we would give them a real run for their money.
No matter what team you're representing, though, whether it's Team USA or maybe a First Nations team, down the line when you reach a level to your sport like you see at the Olympics, it's a part of that social karma. You have to pay it forward. So just like Abby Rock was inspired by her Indigenous athletes before her, she is now using her platform to support young female and Indigenous players.
I get a lot of messages just from younger girls who are playing in a lot of like male-dominated hockey communities, honestly, who just want to talk to somebody who did that. I've had that happen on multiple occasions, and it's just something that I love to do, because it's not a hard thing to do. You pick up the phone and you get to talk to somebody who loves hockey and wants to play. And for me, I think that's a big thing, is just making sure that everybody knows that there's a place in the sport for them, and that they shouldn't be intimidated or not confident. Be like, I'm just like, no, you belong on the ice. And I'm like, even if they don't think you're good enough to play with them, show them. It's plain and simple.
The Olympics could be an opportunity for Abby to show them, plain and simple, as a female athlete, but even more so as an Indigenous athlete. And that's not a responsibility she's taking lightly.
It really does mean the world to me. I think I've thought about this before, and I've had other people say it, like, you will be one of the only Indigenous people probably at the Olympics, Abby. Like, it's a big deal to make it that far, and especially the only Indigenous person on our roster, if I can, obviously, you may want to make it. I think just thinking about that is very surreal, but also makes you very grateful. For me, hockey was so accessible and so part of my life that it never was truly a challenge for me to just fall in love with it and be playing it, where so many kids aren't as lucky.
Abby's dad has encouraged her to use her platform to make the sport better, more accessible, and more inclusive.
One way she's doing that is by teaming up with the hockey equipment company Bauer to highlight stories of underrepresented players and to invest in increasing access to the sport for First Nation players.
For him, he's always like, just give back whenever you can. If you can go be somewhere and be visible and help kids like grow the game and help kids learn how to play, he's like, just try to give back. And I think his main point is, he's like, you should always want to help more people play hockey. And that is kind of what stuck with me from growing up where I did and growing up now. It's just, you always want to help the game be better.
Go back to the My New Favorite Olympian feed right now to check out previous episodes. While you're there, tap the subscribe button to get automatic downloads of My New Favorite Olympian for free. Stay tuned for a preview of next week's episode of My New Favorite Olympian.
I remember like hearing my back break.
Brock Crouch was filming a snowboarding video in British Columbia in April 2018 when his life changed forever.
And then all of a sudden it was just like avalanche, avalanche, avalanche on the radio. I was fully passed out. They were like about to, I think, start CPR, and I woke up to them like clapping above my face, because that's what you're supposed to do to try and bring someone back.
Avalanches are on the rise, and scientists blame the weather variability caused by climate change. We are coming off of a winter where 37 people died in avalanches in the United States, the most in recorded history. Seeing the effects and consequences of climate change firsthand, winter athletes like Brock are determined to do something about it.
It sucks when people don't believe in it or don't see it changing, because a lot of people aren't fortunate enough to be able to travel the world and get to like go and experience all these cool places. So when you're seeing it like in front of your eye, it's something that's pretty scary for sure.
My New Favorite Olympian was produced by NBCLX. Apollo Ono and I and Guzzi Akelito were your hosts. Janine Doyen wrote, produced, and edited this episode. Seth Rubenroyt and Fernando Hurtado were supervising producers. Jeremy Berg and Matt Goldberg served as executive producers. Tony Pierce was the motion graphics designer with support from Michael Katowski. Stephen Morello, Nina Lin, and Mackenzie Bame served as directors of photography. Stephen Dawson was the media manager and quality controller. This broadcast is presented by the authority of the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form without the express written consent of the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee.